Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock, and oh, you can feel that heat coming through your ears right now as that fire is crackling away. And Sporer, he's right over there. He's poking it with a stick. It's okay, Sporer. Come sit down. Come join us.
Okay, I'm here. I just had to get it flaring back up. I like when it just does those big flourishes of course, heat.
Absolutely. Wait, welcome everybody to the Fireside Chat. And this week, we're going to do a little bit of a carryover from last week where Sporer had some rankings out. I, of course, have mine on every Monday. And we wanted to highlight some of the guys that maybe we have both shifted on a bit since last week, where either Sporer was higher, I was higher. Just generally, we know that these guys are going to be shifting, I believe, in our rankings. And really, over the last week, Sporer, has there been a specific pitcher that you maybe have differed or at least seen the light in a different way on that you're like, yeah, you know what? If I were to go back in my rankings, I probably would be doing a big shift on that one right now.
A guy that's just plagued me all year. And when I ranked him 36, I felt like I was kind of on the down end. And that's Joe Musgrove. Ends up having a pretty good outing against the Yankees. And it was my sit of the week. So we'll get to that later. You know, so I'm going to take the L there. I know you asked, do I have a change on someone? It's not even so much that I have a change. It's that I still don't know what to do. I mean, actually, I do know what to do. If you have him, I think you have to start Joe Musgrove. That's the tough part. Sometimes, I'm sure you talk about this daily when you're going through stuff, there can be concerns about guys, but they're not inherently actionable. And right. That's where I'm at with Musgrove. Like, throughout all of this, he still has a 5.66 ERA and a 1.48 whip. And I can't find myself really sitting him in many spots. Again, I know he was my sit of the week recommendation last week, but that was for people that are stronger than me that can get away from guys. Although, as I said, it turned out to be bad. But I still don't really know what to make of him. He still frustrates me to no end right now. And I hate being on those, I don't want to say sinking ships, because I'm not sure that it's sinking, but those rocky ships, let's call it that, right? Like, yeah. That sucker is moving all over in the water. And I think you just got to hold on and weather the storm, so to speak. But he's a guy that I think if I did a update this week, in a weird way, maybe unfairly, he might go down despite the good start against the Yankees. So did you get a chance to watch that or deep dive the start against the Yankees?
What I really liked is that he had good pitch separation. It felt like more in control of what he wanted to do. I've certainly seen Musgrove have starts where it's just, well, all right, here comes down the curveball. And it certainly felt like Musgrove said, like, no, this is going to be the curveball. This is going to be the slider here. I'm going to try a fastball over here and so on and so forth. So solid stuff for Musgrove there. I don't feel that we're quite out of the water yet. I don't really feel like he's in a place where he's really locked in with getting whiffs consistently.
That's where I'm at.
And by the way, I just want to let everybody know, I forgot that I normally like to do this one now standing up. And Sporer realized that and said, uh-oh.
That's right. We said we were standing.
Yeah.
And gotta do it.
I let, of course, Sporer do his thing. I was like, you know what? We really need to look there with our arms clasped behind our back as we rock back and forth in our robes looking at the fire.
I will definitely be moving. I definitely do that. When
Musgrove is a good call there. And really at this point, how would you be really shifting it? So you had him last
week. Like I said, yeah. Sorry to cut you off. In a weird way, like he might go down a little bit. I know that seems crazy coming off of that start. I don't know, man. I kind of throw my arms up. I know it's not a fulfilling answer to be like, I don't know. And then you just kind of waffle back and forth. At 36, maybe I just hold the fort there. Because I know it was, some people were like, oh my gosh, that's low. You got him 50. And I don't know if you dropped him lower this week or moved him back up.
There. It's that Holly tier. There really are so many good pitchers right now. That's the thing.
None of them are available. We were talking about that. And I know that the streaming situation is definitely different, 15 to 12. But like, I think even in 12s, things are getting light out there because there's not enough. To me, there hasn't been a big infusion of pitchers coming in, right? We're not turning over things much. Yes, yeah. There's injuries, but the guys that are coming in aren't necessarily appealing. We've talked about it multiple times, both on this pod and my other pods. We're not getting those prospects coming up every week either. So it's kind of weird. But yeah, with Musgrove, I'm just going to hold steady with him. He still frustrates me, but I guess I can't really move him down after the past week. But you highlighted a bunch of names that
yeah
are really intriguing here. I guess the other one that I would go to next, if before I let you take the wheel in there, is Snell, because he's coming into a two-step, and I talk about this frustrating but not actionable. I'm kind of there with him too, where I'm like, I'm sticking with him. Now, he's been very bad. Blake Snell has been really, really rough. The issue that I have personally, though, is that he is on a mid to late April trajectory right now. He's only five starts in. So he's wherever guys were five starts in. And I would not have told people to cut or sit the reigning Cy Young five starts in.
Sure.
So I'm still not there, even though we're about to turn the calendar to June. How do you deal with that, where it feels like it's getting later because we are about to turn that calendar, but for somebody like Snell, it's five starts, but they've been dreadful.
Yeah.
Is he cuttable in anything shallower to you?
Well, so it's tough. By the way, I should correct myself. Musgrove just went at 1 point to 49 for me because, again, there's so many
deep so holly tier.
I have Clark Schmidt higher than Joe Musgrove right now, for example.
I think I would move him too. I had him 41. He would probably leapfrog Musgrove.
Cutter is just so good. That was the last piece of the puzzle for Clark Schmidt, and he really showcased it this past week once again. With Blake Snell, it's really difficult because, as I'm mentioning, in your 12 teamers, there are so many good pitchers. And having a roster spot in a 12 teamer at the moment that is dedicated to the future is really hard. I think this year, more than most, I've really said, guys, stop stashing and just go and get the value that is out there for the most part. There are leagues that pitchers are hoarded and the available arms on the wire are not that valuable. And the streams that you think that you're banking on, well, really aren't that great. So you might as well just be holding on to Snell and just wait for it. I think every year we see this with Blake Snell. People forget that before he went on his 120, ERA 120 whip run or whatever it was just 4+ ERA and not good. And what we saw in the last start for Snell was actually the Blake Snell blueprint. Believe it or not, he did it just way out of the zone. And he allowed the hits as opposed to not allowing the hits as he did last year. So it's something that we don't know when it's going to happen. It will happen. I don't know when. It's up to you guys if you're in a position to start him in those. Honestly, you don't have to. Like, once Blake Snell does well, you can be like, cool, now we have this, it's great. You don't have to keep getting burned in the meantime. It is a roster spot, but if you just treat it like a prospect pitcher, you know, like in a month, that's dope. Like, just do that. That's honestly, I think, the thing I would do in a 12 teamer.
Yeah. And he got Philly and New York this week, both New York being the Mets, Yankees, excuse me, both at home. I said, I would have started him 4 innings, 3 earned yesterday with 7 punchies. I do like the 7 punchies. I got to admit, with Snell, I was a bit moved by the 9 no-hit innings on the rehab, thinking like, hey, you got the command back, let's go. And I know it's the minors, but it looked really sharp and comes up and was immediately back to the crumminess. So yeah, I can get behind some sits. I still can't cut though, personally. I can't. He's too good. The upside is too rich. I can't cut Blake Snell. And I have seen some chatter. In fact, a little bit of discussion in my SP chart today, somebody had asked, I got these guys, who should I cut? And one of the other chatters said I'd cut Snell. And I'm just, even in a 10 teamer, I can't do it.
In a 10 teamer, I'd even say absolutely, because that means that you have so much actual value now that the value later on that you would get from Snell relatively for when you're searching for the wire at that point is not going to be as much of a standout. So I would even say 10 teamer, the shallower you get, the more droppable Snell gets.
True.
Yeah.
I still can't get there in a 10 to cut him though.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Other guys to just kind of comment about with our differences here. I think last week, one on my side was Mackenzie Gore. I had him up at 40, him at 62. He was part of that big glob for you. And next to him really was Nick Pivetta for you. And it's kind of interesting how both of those guys went in different directions, right? Pivetta showed his volatility once again, which is a little unnerving. And I don't know exactly what to make of Pivetta right now. I want to think that that's just a one-time thing and he's going to get back into that groove. But I did drop him a little bit this week. But Mackenzie Gore is... been ridiculous. Not a single game this entire year has been above 300 runs, and those are just 2 games of 300 runs
and just one walk in 7.
oh yeah, when this is a thing, is that he finally got a good matchup again. Mm-hmm. He'd been going through all this gauntlet, and yeah, he dominated the Mariners. Seven innings of, I believe, nine strikeouts, maybe seven strikeouts. It was just
eight,
great.
Eight punchies, one run, four eight, hits a walk. Just excellent, yeah. Excellent work from Gore. You know, great juxtaposition there with these two, Mackenzie Gore and Nick Pivetta. Let me circle back to Pivetta real quick. Mm-hmm. How do you deal? Like, this is one of the reasons I don't like to, I can't do week to week personally, and I respect you for being able to do it. Because how do you deal with those ebbs and flows? Because, yeah, you talk about how he went down a little. You didn't tank him or anything. He got knocked around, but it was in a great matchup. Or difficult matchup, I should say. Like, the matchup was a great lineup is what I mean to say there. So how do you deal with those ups and downs week to week of not over freaking out when people say, you're leaving Pivetta here, he just gave up five. And it's like, well, it was a bad outing against a good team.
It's the hardest thing that we do. It's all about the micro movements. What I try and do as best I can is to say, okay, this was a performance skills-wise that does suggest a downward trend. But you make it a trend. You don't make it a drop, right? So I do little movements. I say every week, like, do I feel that? It's like Justin Steele allowed five earned runs in his game, and he went into the seventh inning with like two earned runs and six, and he somehow allowed five. And I don't understand how that happens.
Two bequeathed runners scored.
It's just, how do you leave him in that long to have those in the first?
Well, no. I understand that, but I'm just saying the bullpen did give up two of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But I don't know why they let him do that.
Get allowed three base runners, and that just makes no sense. Maybe it was two, but still, it's just like, no. Anyway, Justin Steele's skills were much better in that one. So my confidence after that, despite the bad ERA in that one for Justin Steele, is like, no. This is the trajectory that we're going in, right? And then Pivetta, I see, okay, the skills were worse. He actually didn't have breaking ball command. And that's the thing that sold me last year in Pivetta, was that not only was he throwing his old fastball that has a ton of vert and all that stuff, but he finally had a breaking ball that was legit and a cutter to back it up. And I was like, oh man, this is the stuff that he never had before. So it is a little concerning of that. I say, well, okay, one outing is not going to define it, but if you were to fall, this is the beginning of it. So I need to dock him some points. But it's just about the ebbs and flows. Sometimes it's just like one out of like 10 games are bad. I'm like, well, I'm not going to do anything because that's just one and who cares. If it is a sign of something that we've seen before, then it does, you know, affect things. But I think I moved him, I don't know, like five spots or something like that. It wasn't really the dramatic, oh, now he's in the 50s or something along those lines. I can't do it yet. But if Pivetta continues to do that, then yeah, that's how I deal with it.
Okay. Yeah, not easy.
Yeah. Now going back to Gore, though, how are you feeling about Gore right now?
I mean, he looks amazing. And you know, the upside's always been there. The richness of his talent has been such where it's like, if he puts this together, we have ace potential, right? He was touted as a potential frontline starter. And I don't want to speak in too much of that past tense as if, oh, we're getting some age 28 breakout. Folks, Mackenzie Gore's 25 years old. This is a more than normal trajectory to possibly be rounding into form here, even though he's caused some past issues for folks in 22 and 23. He was a baby. And even those panics or those issues weren't that bad. They were pretty whip related with some decent enough ERAs. Bottom line is he has to move up. And so I kind of keep a running list. Obviously, I don't publish every week because I don't update it every week. But there's certain times, you know, as I'm going over box scores and doing things, I'm like, oh, this guy has to go up. This guy has to go down. Even though he got beat up yesterday, one of the guys that I felt I was too low on was Charlie Morton. So there's already a note for the June update. I was like, oh, I got to move him up. And again, apropos of nothing yesterday, I'm not worried about yesterday's start necessarily. He was at 92. Even with yesterday's stinker, he still needs to go up. So there's a note for him to go up. Mackenzie Gore got the note after the Seattle start. Actually, really after our conversation about it on the pod last week, paired with the Seattle start, I'm like, yeah, green arrow next to him. He has to shoot up. I think right now on a re-rack, Gore is probably 37 to 45, somewhere in that range. Yeah, sure. So like a big sharp jump from 62 where I have him, because there's a lot of trustworthiness here, and it's certainly not a one one starts going to throw me either. He could give up seven earned next time out, and it wouldn't be like, oh, I can't believe I moved him up. I'm not hoping for that, folks. I'm sorry, but you know, he gets Atlanta against somebody we're going to talk about later, Spencer Schwellenbach. But yeah, he gets more leeway than that. I will say, nice little gauntlet here. Two of his next three are against Atlanta, including a two-step next week with the Mets and Atlanta both at home for Mackenzie Gore. If he comes shining out of those three, I think all of a sudden you're talking about a top 30 pitcher.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I actually have him inside my top 30 right now, believe it
or not. Love it.
Because the way I see it too is I think the schedule overall is going to be better for Mackenzie Gore. And he has two, his all secondaries are just cooking. I even see even more with the slider. The slider from Mackenzie Gore is this harder 91, 92. It's almost like a cutter, but he loves going down and in to righties with a down and away to lefties. That's the stuff I absolutely love, especially with a four-seamer that has just all the shape stuff you want. Curveball changeup as well. It's there for Mackenzie Gore. The only issue really has been that it's the Nationals. I'm not seeing as much of Hylock as I thought I would. I mean, I did see some. I feel like I've been seeing more starts of him actually really leaning into high four-seamers. That's what Hylock stands for. I actually just have numbers. If you don't know this on the Pitchers site, I take the strike zone, just do percentages, and it's just a quicker, easy way instead of just scrutinizing heat maps. And it's not changed that much. It's like slightly above 50% now, which was 49% last year for Mackenzie Gore's four-seamer. But I want that to be like 55%. It should be. And I think over time, that's what we do get with Sean Doolittle there helping him out in D.C. But Mackenzie Gore, I just think the skills are too good. I think next year he's drafted inside the top 25 starters. I think that everyone's just going to fall for Mackenzie Gore in the second half. I think it's a decent transition because he talked about the Mets a little bit there. Someone last week that you were a little bit higher on than me was Christian Scott. Mm-hmm. He was at 53. I had him at 54. Do you feel like you're going to have Gore above or below Christian Scott your next update?
Oh, Gore will be above.
Okay. Because you're saying like the 35 to 45 range, 43 was Christian Scott.
Yeah, almost regardless of what Scott does, it's less any negatives on Scott, who I've continued to be impressed with. It is funny that his only bad start was in Miami. Love when baseball does that to us, you know. Nice quality start with eight punches against Atlanta. Okay, let's get to Miami. 4-4. Awesome. But anyway, yeah, there's not really anything that he could necessarily do. Gore is, again, heavy green arrow, double green arrow, if you will. Whereas Scott is kind of just holding serve here. I still have him as a top 50 guy. Mm-hmm. I still feel really good about starting him every time out. But Gore has skyrocketed past
him. Yeah, with Scott, what's interesting is his main thing is, hey, high four seamers, I got this, no problem. Let's put him here, you can't hit him. And hey, I also got this really dope sweeper. Mm-hmm. Last two starts, fastball command has not been great. And that's why he can go into Miami and not do the things you want him to do. Because if he's not being Christian Scott, then it doesn't matter who he faces. Those are still major league batters.
And I think sometimes we forget that with any pitcher, really, is that
yeah.
when your stuff isn't there, even Oakland, even the White Sox, even my, you know, say your team, it doesn't matter. If you're not executing, you don't have as much wiggle room. Now, some guys, of course, they have enough margin for error that even their weakest outing can still defeat like the White Sox or whatever. But I don't think Christian Scott's there yet. So you're right. When he's not executing, you see something like the Miami star. But I still feel pretty good about him personally. I don't know if you're are you moving down on him then?
Absolutely. I have him in my 50s, but I'm a fan. Yeah. We're going to talk about some more of these guys. And there's some really fun ones that I think that you really nailed after this break. So I got to give you credit here. Guys that I've upped in my ranks, Hunter Green and Tanner Bibee. And Bibee in particular is super interesting. I talked about it a bit with Eric yesterday. But Bibee's changed his release a bit. It was a 0.4 height-adjusted VAA on his four-seamer for a bit, which is, if you don't know, height-adjusted VAA, essentially 1.0 means it's like neutral. Mm-hmm. And anything that is a lower number than that means that it's steep, which is not good for trying to throw high four seamers. This whole stay verty thing with Tanner Bibee, the more it's under one, it's bad. But if it's above one, like 1.2, or if you get to like Joe Ryan's 1.8, that is elite and that is flat. And that means that it's really hard to get the timing right at high four seamers. So Tanner Bibee being 0.4 was like, well, you are this is not great. Steep means you should be going low, not high. Last start, 13 four-seamer whiffs, 0.7 height adjusted VAA. He also gained 2 inches of vert since 4 starts ago. Actually, I believe over 2 starts ago. And there's something maybe there in the water that's affecting Tanner Bibee a little bit. I'm more inclined. I have him at 58. I can imagine that this does continue. And you had him at 44 last week. And now are you going to move Tanner Bibee higher up? Or is it just more of like, this is who Tanner Bibee is. He might regress a little bit and I'm cool with that.
I think if we were moving a little, if we were readjusting list today, there'd be a little jump up for Bibee. Nothing like an overreaction, like back to his preseason number, which I think was just outside the top 30. A guy I really like, but let's take it cautiously here. I don't want to overreact. I felt confident enough to kind of leave him in that top 50 range, despite the fact that he wasn't doing his best work and had some of the issues that you were highlighting for Bibee. But I always trusted him and Cleveland too, that okay, they're going to work through this. I got to give him a pretty decent runway here to see what's what. And I've been duly impressed with the last 3 outings at Texas, home to Minnesota, and at the Angels. The Angels, the only ones that really did too much against them. They had one good inning where they got those 3 earned. But I love the 8 and 6 strikeouts the last 2 times out, 7 and 6 innings in those as well. So going deeper, just looking a lot more like last year's Tanner Bibee in terms of the results. So probably not jumping too much, but more just, hey, this is what I was thinking. Stick with what you got here. Don't overreact and then jump him up too high for Bibee.
I don't know if the arm angle is going to be the same. I mean, it has changed. That's really good. We see this from time to time where guys like kind of mess around a little bit. They do something and they don't actually with a purpose be like, no, this is the thing.
And that goes back to my earlier point about the difficulty of the week to week and why I respect your ability to do it, because I don't know how to make heads and tails of it sometimes, right? Like, we've talked about this before where we're saying, like, why won't so-and-so throw this pitch? Yeah. And then we come to learn, you know, as you've gained more access to things or whatever, you can be talking with maybe somebody behind the pitcher development at a particular team, and they'll say, well, the catcher didn't call it. And this is a pitcher who listens to his catcher entirely. Right, and we're not trying to, like, blame the catcher, but, like, there are things that go into it. Not everyone is Zach Greinke calling their own game out there, right? Sure. Everyone is so different that it is hard. So you're right on this attack angle with Bibee. It's a positive. We love it. Is Cleveland hammering that home? Is that something that he set out to do? Or is it kind of dumb luck where the way he was throwing, he just happened to be doing that better, and now he's going to fall back into the old situation that he was doing before that when things weren't going as well for Bibee. So I agree there that it is hard to kind of trust him. That's why I wouldn't overreact with a big jump up.
Definitely. Renee Deckard was able to talk to Tanner Bibee yesterday a bit about this, and be on the lookout for that. She's a pitchless staffer, does incredible work. She'll probably have something about Tanner Bibee in the near future. That will give some more illumination on it and about that Bibee's thought process of changing it. I still don't know where we stand on if it's going to stick around or not, but it's a really great conversation. Bibee's really, really cool to talk to. It's always the hard part of me just being like, I don't know, shrug, cool, awesome. I hope he does things. And there is something to be said too about, like, I absolutely come across at times saying, like, I know what is best and this is crazy and it's fun. You know, it's fun for me to do that, just to get really impassioned or passionate about it, emboldened by certain pitch decisions and locations and everything. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are a lot of people looking at this stuff too. A lot of times there are certain reasons why it isn't that I'm necessarily glossing over, or maybe this is just not a skill of theirs, all that kind of stuff. There's so much information at play that these guys are balancing in between. And even though that I get really heated and passionate, it doesn't mean that I'm always right. I am certainly not. But I will continue to be impassioned. I'm going to make that a word, impassioned. Emboldened, impassionate, and one. Just for you guys, because I think it's, I don't know. I believe in this stuff.
Well, it's who you are, too.
I want to change
who you are. Yeah. That would not.
But then I just want to know.
No value to that.
Understand.
No, I get it. And, you know, there, like I said, there are things that as we've made more connections and been able to meet more people, we do get to learn some of that stuff. And it is illuminating, and it helps us deal with other things. Because like I said, I do have to step back sometimes and be like, yeah, they're not all looking at it through the same prisms that we are. they might value something differently. They might think that something that, whether we're right or wrong here, they might think that something that we think is the solution for a pitcher is a stupid idea. They could feasibly think that.
Are you back in on Kevin Gausman?
No.
I mean, we got no StatCast data. And that's so fun because it broke. But your stupid Detroit. Blaine, can you get that fixed for us?
Yeah, seriously, we need to get that situated there. No, I mean, running over the Tigers, and it was a pretty decent outing against Tampa Bay. The Tigers don't put the ball in place, so they couldn't really leverage his BABIP issue, right? That's his primary issue. I mean, he has to handle a team like this. I still just don't have a ton of confidence with him. It is going back to the very beginning of the show when we were talking about, who were we talking about? Musgrove,
yes. Right?
Yeah, where there might be issues that I'm concerned with, but they're not actionable. He still gets the 3X recommendation every SP chart that he's involved in. I don't tell anybody to take Kevin Gausman out of their lineup. I don't think you should. He's pitching today. Of course, he's at the White Sox, so I gave him the 3Xs. But he was 10th on the board. Like, it kind of shows that, yes, even at the White Sox, I'm, of course, starting him. But if you're, doing DFS, I'm not really going for him, even though that's a great matchup. I don't know. I'm very nervous with him. Maybe I should have had him a little bit higher since it is in Chicago. And one of my concerns about Gausman is that the Toronto infield, that the turf is causing some of these BABIP issues. So in fairness, I will say I could have had him closer to 8 or 9. Well, I don't know though, because I have Scooble, Glass, now Wheeler, Jared Jones. It's a deep board today. Reagans, Freed, Peralta, Castillo, Littell ahead of him. How many of those guys, like maybe two or three of those guys, you would put Gausman above, right?
I mean, I actually have him at 5, and I probably meant to put him at 7.
I could see 7. I don't know about 5.
Yeah, I mean, I had him above Freed and Jones. I'm like, yeah, dude, should I really? But then again, like, here's the thing. You put it really well of he threw against the Tigers, and the Tigers are a team that you throw fastballs in there, and they're not going to do anything with it.
Nothing with it. Yep.
And the thing is, that's also the thing for the White Sox.
Exactly. And that's why you should be higher for today. I will fully
really
grant that.
I feel like he should explode against them and he'll go.
I totally agree.
Jaron Jones hasn't actually succeeded as much as we've expected lately, but then it is also the Tigers.
I was going to say, he's facing that same Tigers team.
I was getting there. But yeah, it's, there's Castillo, Grayson Rodriguez underneath, Luzardo, Cortez.
I got Grayson below him.
So that makes sense. That's a really great point, though, about being the Tigers, and we can't really read into that one for Kevin Gausman. What about Luis Gil? Last time we checked, I am at 41. You had him at 50. He just looked more dominant and getting all the strikes. I would have to think that you're higher than 50 now.
Yeah, I mean, I love Luis Gil, so my ranking was never like, ooh, be careful. Like, I was in on him all spring. I'm fully aboard. The fact that we have just 5 walks in the last 3 starts combined and 6-plus innings in each of the last 5 outings is very encouraging. His May has been a May to remember. Gil, I'm still trying to temper myself on him, and I think I overcorrected with that ranking when I put him at 50, where I was like, okay, don't get too crazy, relax. But even with my, new outlook that I think you share in, of not trying to think too far beyond, I don't care about rest of season. Hit me up in 3 weeks for you, it's a week, right? Week to week. So you don't have to worry about how is he going to look in August? Is he going to be pitching? Who cares? We will deal with that. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. So yeah, enough rambling. He would be like 35 right now. So about a 15 spot jump. I'm basically just waiting for a reason to jump him. And I think he's had 2, maybe even 3 of those starts since I placed him in those rankings, because they took a while to get done. And so I had his ranking probably sitting there for a little bit. And then he's put up 3 gems, he being Luis Gil, with wins in all 3 of them, by the way. Remember, he was the hard luck, no decision guy in April, due in part to himself when he was walking too many guys. But then a couple times he got taken out too early. And then he reels off 5 straight dubs here in May, does Luis Gil, with 6 innings minimum in each of them. So yeah, I think at least top 30 right now, because for the next 2 to 4 week window, Luis Gil is an automatic must start for me. There's no matchup I would take him out for.
So I want to say yes to that. The only negative I have is, well, what's the Achilles heel? I'm so sorry. It just literally, I want to say
No. That's a good one. Why. No, that's a good one.
Here's the thing, Spore. I do the SP roundup puns all the time. And when I go over them with my graphics designers, most of the time it's Justin Paradis. We both know we're not taking the easy one. We don't do the quick one that I know every single person has put onto Twitter at one point or something. Okay. We're better than that. We are better than that. But so his weakness, Luis Gil, is strikes and being able to actually throw enough in the zone. And that's what really plagued him early in the season. We saw those lower innings for starts because if it wasn't pitches, he was throwing over 85 of them. It was just 4.1 innings because he was just inefficient with
absolutely
being able to throw enough strikes. That could still go away.
Sure.
So I feel more confident in someone like Mackenzie Gore. I feel like, yeah, you're going to throw enough strikes. You've got this. Gil is still a little bit of that volatility.
So wait, what's the split there?
57% strike rate. Well, it's not that hard. It's not that ridiculous. I have a cherry bomb tier. It's essentially like you have like the potential aces. Then you have a really solid, like, I know these guys are like, I love like Yu Darvish, for example. For me, it's just like, look, I know you allowed home runs against the Yankees, but like you're not taking him out of your lineup. You're doing the thing. Yeah. That's fine. And you have like Hauk is in there too, right? The leaders of that, and like Bailey Ober, like, okay. After that is a little mini cherry bomb tier of like, look, I want to believe in this. I really, really want to feel like you're going to be those guys, but there's still some questions of track record and polish needed across the arsenal for me to really feel that. And Heal's a part of it. So is Hunter Green. And that's actually, I think, right around 40 for me with Gil. So I don't really think we're that far off.
No.
The framework in my head is about what is the arsenal? Is this a consistent expectation across the arsenal? And we're not quite there with Gil yet because the changeup and slider are still erratic start to start, while the four-seamer is getting more and more consistent in the top half of the zone.
I just think I'm similarly focused on Gore, but I'm also giving him a big jump. So I agree and disagree at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course it does.
Where I just kind of pair Gil and Gore a little bit tighter. Mm-hmm. You're more confident in Gore, and you have been all year. So this is consistent with where you've been on him. You jumped on early. That was part of our big talk last week about Gore. So that's fine. I can see that. But I think Heal's done enough this month not to assuage the strike concerns, because like you said, they could appear. But since we are narrowing it down more in looking at 2 to 4 week periods as opposed to rest of season stuff, again, you cannot construct a matchup right now that I would take Gil out for without like three duds ahead of it, right? He could get blasted next time out. I'm unmoved. A second straight dud. Let's take a look. Is he throwing the ball all over the place? We have to reassess. Like, for example, he gets the Angels this week. Okay. If he handles them, great.
So that's the thing is that, like, I would, if Gore goes against the Angels and Gil goes against the Angels, there is a lower floor for Gil. And that, I think, is the difference for me.
Well, based on their performance against that handedness, that is not true. But I hear that, you're talking about the pitcher, though. You're talking about the pitcher.
That way, though.
I understand that. I totally understand that, because I'm going to have confidence in my pitcher more than I am worried about the lineup stats. So I totally get you there. I'm only bringing up lineup performance there.
Same point that I think you're going to bring up again later too.
But I do understand that with Gore. I'm curious. Okay, so if Heal goes like 5 innings, 3 runs, 4 walks against the Angels, how hard does that hit him for you?
No, it doesn't matter to me what the line is. I really just want to know, like, is this a guy who's able to continuously get strikes or not?
Well, that's why I brought up the 4 walks. So in this instance,
not all walks, of course, are created equal. I would imagine if it is Heal, it means that he's just having low strike rates across the board.
Yeah.
But there has certainly been times I've seen like a lot of games where it's like, really, this is a lot of like 5 walks or something? And it's guys like right around the shadow zone that just aren't getting the fights at the right time, or they just lose a batter here and there. And that's just how it is. Like it's like a 4-pitch walk or something like that. As opposed to just inefficient. Every batter is like 2-0.
Yeah. 3-1. No idea where the ball is going type vibe. Yeah.
So there's a big difference there between them. And if it's a start where I see 4-seamer is then erratic shotgun again, I see changeups that are not there, I'm like, okay, I'm not as confident for the next one. I'm going to, at least at this point, I'm with you on, Luis Gil, you somewhat get a pass at this moment. However, that is the biggest fear for Gil, and he's still capable of hitting that floor much more so than Gore, which is why I'm talking about it in this way. Okay. But I am encouraged, absolutely. And I even remember before he even went on the true run of it, being like, no, changeup strikes are there. Slider strikes are there. Fastball's looking more condensed. Like, this is going in the right direction as opposed to the first 3-4 starts that he had. In that tier, there are two guys I want to kind of finish this whole comparison to, because these are ones I'm still a little like tepid on. I don't know how to feel. Okay. First one I already mentioned is Hunter Green.
Yeah.
Whose four seamer has performed just massively better, right? ICR has come down to around 33% on the four seamer, as opposed to like 45 or whatever. Like it's a big drop on it. And that's a huge, huge deal. He's throwing a few more strikes on it. He has a better vert. He's not allowed the home runs. It's like a 33% amount of, it was like 5% home run fly ball rate versus 15%.
Yep.
Last year for Hunter Green's fastballs. And he's not allowing more pop-ups. It's just really more grounders, which is really strange in the four-seamer. I thought there would be like, oh, more vert, which means you miss higher up on barrels, and oh, you have a lower ICR. This is obviously these like hard hit balls getting transferred into pop-ups. Duh. Nope. It's grounders. What?
Yeah. I
don't get it.
So, I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah. So how do you feel on, I mean, Green, you were higher than me last time we chatted. You had a 46, 55. I have Green around that 46 now. Are you still there, even though he just got another whiff heavy game against the Dodgers?
Yeah, because it is one of those things where I rank him, you know, kind of lowish, but going back to kind of what's become a little bit of the theme of the episode, his concerns are inactionable for me. If you chose to ride the ride with Green, ride it. I didn't choose to, because I didn't want, he is hipster to the max for me.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Headache induced and starting pitcher that stifles entire rotation.
Sorry. What? Yeah. I had him at 70.
Coming into the year, or
yeah, around like 70.
No, I get it.
I don't want to deal with it.
Exactly how I felt. And so it's one of those where it's a classic do as I say, not as I do. I don't want him. But if you guys rostered him, don't try to time Hunter Green. That's my main thing, is don't try to time it. If you chose to ride the ride, ride it, because he'll have his gems at home against the Dodgers randomly, and then he'll get blown up in Miami. When he's off, he's off. We were talking about this earlier. When a guy's off, a major league team can get him. Green is that way. He could dominate the 27 Yankees when he's on, and he could lose to me, Nick, and seven others when he's off. Okay, not really that.
We can dominate the 27 Yankees, all right?
But no, I ranked him at 44 coming into the year. I haven't really moved him from there. He just kind of is what he is. Just start Green and let's see where the ride goes. Now, if he makes a significant turn, because another reason I didn't really move him, in fact, what he moved down, I guess, he moved down two spots preseason to May, because I don't trust the 6% home run to fly ball rate.
Yeah, right.
Like, I just think that that's going to regress. And so there's going to be some hard times coming up. But now if there are hard times, that pushes the ERA from 306 to get Green up to like the 370 Sierra that he has, well, I can live with that. But if it pushes him back up into low to mid fours, then that's where I'm like,
right? If he gets pushed to 370 ERA, it's not like you have a 370 ERA. You actually have a 420 or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah. From this point on. But I still, there is that, like, banked versus the whole season. I paid, if I decided to get on this Hunter Green ride,
right?
I think the most realistic expectation that you could have for a projection, not for a wish, but for a projection, would be like 380, 125.
Mm.
So I know I got a 306, 114 right now, and you're right. That would be like a 420, 130 from this point forward. I'm still taking all of it, though, because you need the Ks. There's going to be some wins. I think you have to eat it. I can't try to time Hunter Green.
Yeah. No, I completely understand that. I think I'm with you there. One last guy who's in this cherry bomb tier for me, because I don't know, man. What are we doing with Walker Buehler?
Oh, my goodness. I thought you might ask about that one.
I mean, you had him at 30. I'm at 30. I was thinking, look, he had two bad starts, and then he kind of looked a lot more like him. And then the last game I just saw was not. It was... not unimpressive. It again.
And he's lucky he didn't get smoked.
He just looks lost.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And we were talking about this earlier with you know, margin for error can help pitchers. He's frankly lucky that it's only a 4.26 ERA for Buehler. The way he's pitched outside of the Cincy home start, because he went to Cincy, he faced them two times in a row. Outside of that gem at home against Cincy, he has looked lost. Like you said, that's a great way to term it. It is one of those, though, where... boy, this is where our 15-12 team discrepancy comes up too. Because in a 15, I just don't think you have any choices.
No, you don't
have choices. You ain't got anybody better. He gets the Rockies at home this week and then a trip to Pittsburgh. I can't envision a format, 10, 12, whatever, where I'm sitting him. I think you just got to run with everything right now. And I think we check back in, not next episode, because he won't have thrown the Pittsburgh one, but the episode after that. After these two starts here, that will be six starts into Buehler's return, then we can really get an idea of where we're at. If these are wobbly, because these are two good matchups, Colorado out of Rocky Road and then a trip to Pittsburgh, if you can't make hay out of that, then we have to start to assessing maybe benching Buehler in some. You take off that R, it is Buehler. Or no, the R would have to move. It would have to move. You don't take it off. But anyway, I think if he bombs out one of these two starts and is just okay in the other, and we just kind of get like a 450 some ERA out of these two, we need to assess starting Buehler. And whether or not he needs to be benched in the shallower formats. I think even in 15s, though, it's going to be hard to get away from him at any point right now.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, I have to believe that over time, Buehler finds, shakes off the rust.
I think so, too. I'm staying confident with him.
Yeah, the constant thing with Tommy John is they say, look, the velocity returns, but then does the feel. And it is shocking to me. Most because it's been longer for Buehler. He could have returned last September and he didn't. And he had the proper spring. He had all the things he really wanted, I think. I mean, not necessarily proper spring because they did slow him down. But this is like, hey, cool. You've gone that time that you should be at a farther point in your journey. But then again, who knows? The stuff is still really good.
Yes. And that's what's saving Buehler. Because like I said, he should have like a 5.20 ERA. With a normal stuff guy throwing what he's been throwing in these starts, would have a 5.20, 5.50. He's got a 4.26 because his margin for error is larger. And that's a perfect example. Look at the Cincy start in Cincy for Buehler. Perfect example of how great core stuff, even when it's not working, can open your margin for error. Because he should have been rocked.
Yeah, it's something that I'm tempted even to buy low. Because I think
I can get behind that.
Everyone has our sentiment that like, yeah, this isn't the guy. And like, oh, this is just who he is now. And I'm saying, I'm hesitant. I'm like, I don't know. I don't feel
like making
where I do right now because he is not that player right now. But the hardest thing that we do as analysts, and I try and say as much as I can, is the player can deserve exactly what he's had up to now. He can deserve it all the way through and be the guy that says that high ERA or low ERA, whatever it is. That does not mean he's going to deserve it tomorrow.
Exactly. He can
absolutely not be the same skill set. And it's the hardest thing that we do. And the easiest thing we can always say is cool. He deserves something different. Thus he's going to tomorrow, but he could deserve something different then and then deserve the failure later. Right. So these are humans. It's fun. We're not in the business of being right. We're just in the business of good discussion. And speaking of good discussion and being right, we are going to move to our games and we'll talk about that after this break. All right. So Spore, it is through week 9. I took a beating last week. I took a beating. I had to make a little bit of a comeback, and maybe I did. We're going to review our picks from last week. Streamers at 20% under a rostered or fewer. Fewer leagues, 20% or under, according to Fantasy Pros. I had Austin Gomber against the Athletics. You had Ben Lively against Angels. Both of us did well. We both got a point here.
Ding, ding. 22 ding. And 25 points ding. For Lively and Gomber, respectively.
Beautiful. I can't believe that one. Now Austin Gomber has some elbow pain and now he's getting pushed back to the Dodgers. I'm like, nope, we're good.
That stinks. He's been rolling too.
Yeah, it was just three games he's getting pushed back though, but sit of the week. This is a guy who's rostered in over 50% of leagues that we think is going to return fewer than, 10 points? And I have much, against Atlanta. You had Joe Musgrove against the Yankees. I barely sneaked this one out. Javier Saad got 9.
But your principle was if he hadn't had 11 points, I think I still give it to you because your general principle of this being the regression week was dead on. Yeah, he ends up giving up. Yeah. Two starts against Atlanta and St. Louis, ends up 4 bombs, did have 12 punchies. Credit where it's due. 12 strikeouts and 9 2/3 for Assad was nice and unexpected, but 6 earned, 9 hits with 8 walks, so the whip was through the roof, 4 homers. It could have been worse. You're lucky it was only this bad, Assad, folks. And I know I shouldn't say it like that. I'm not like aggro against Assad. I just knew that this was going to be a really tough week. Well, right. So you nailed it there.
Success that he's had. Joe Musgrove had his best start, honestly.
Yeah.
And we talked about last week. It felt like the right thing to sit him against the Yankees. 16 points there.
I'm glad he did well. Yeah, you know, exactly. I take the L, but like I love Joe Musgrove. I always have. I've had trouble with him.
I always
want to
get these wrong,
that.
And I say this constantly. I'm like, I'm never really like happy
because I'm not rooting against him.
Yeah, I wanted to go 0 for the entire year, but I think something to be said too again is if you're a sitting guy and they do well, that's always a positive.
Yes, still got a positive, you have goodness right? on your bench.
Star of the week. I had Nick Martinez against the Padres, and you had Mitchell Parker against Seattle. And this is a little annoying. Because Nick Martinez did not do well against the Padres. He did do well against the Dodgers.
The Dodgers.
And so what changed was that he started throwing more changeups.
How did that look?
His best pitch was thrown the sixth most of all of his 6 pitches in the game against the Padres, like 7th thrown.
Yeah.
And then he decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to throw more changeups against the Dodgers. About 30% thrown. It was great. Super well. There you go. And now he's not on the rotation anymore. So I hope we get to see more Nick Martinez in the future. I think he's starting to embrace throwing the changeup as his premier option and then building off of that as opposed to the other way around. And Mitchell Parker, now this is interesting. So you guys can be the judge. I'm willing to give it to Sport. He won't take it. Because you had Mitchell Parker against Seattle. That start got pushed and you would not, you say he would have been the start of the week because he faced Atlanta. And that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was a star. And here's the thing, guys. Mitchell Parker, did you follow what he did in this game against Atlanta?
Did you catch this? I did. Yes.
Tell us more.
You enlighten us, please. I don't know specifically. I know how he performed. I don't know if you're trying to highlight a particular thing.
Yeah, so he had 6.1 innings, 300 runs, good whip, you know, strikeout inning. It was like, okay, cool. Wow, good stuff, Mitchell Parker. Mitchell Parker, what does he do when he shows up? He throws 4 seamers and curveballs. Dodgers go, whoa, that looks like a much better curveball than we expected. We can't really hit this fastball. Oh, man. Shows up the next start against the Astros and say, well, we're ready for this. Ha-ha! Splitter! What up? Got 3 pitches now. This is great. Then he goes into another start. It's fine. It's okay. They kind of know who he is. So then he says, you know what? I'm going to now throw in a slider. Oh, my gosh. And it was kind of cool. And he's like, wait. I'm like, Mitchell, are you like a 4-pitch pitcher now? Because
maybe
you should have been a 2-pitch. And now you got 4. But then the slider went away. And the slider kind of went away. And I was like, we don't know what you are. This one against Atlanta, he threw 22 sliders.
All 4 pitches were there.
8 whiffs on that slider for a 36% swing strike rate. What?
Huge.
What?
That's the thing with this guy. Mitchell Parker keeps bringing, you know, tricks out of his bag. And I'm talking about here earlier saying, you know, we're not finding too many guys coming into the pool this year. Well, it's not Mitchell Parker. He is one of those guys that's come in this year. He's not the big name prospect. And I think that's the thing too, maybe that, when I lament that there aren't more pitchers coming in, maybe just because they're not big name prospects, they're being glossed over. I don't want Parker to be glossed over. The schedule has been an absolute gauntlet. Dodgers, oh, yeah. Houston, his one start,
of course,
exactly. The trip to Miami was actually one of his lesser starts because he only went 4 innings. They ran up his pitch count a bit, but they still couldn't punish him. Only 1 run at Texas. And I know they're not playing great, but that's still tough for a rookie in his 4th start. Baltimore at the White Sox. And again, one of his lesser starts, hilariously enough. Minnesota at Atlanta. So only 2 of his 8 starts would be what you would consider good matchups. And yet here he is, 44 1/3 innings in with a 3.45 ERA, a 1.11 whip. And like you said, the diversity of his arsenal and how he keeps wielding it differently start to start has been very impressive. Well, we were aghast at the, or not aghast, that sounds like a negative. We were just like stunned by the splitter coming into that Houston start. Like, holy smokes, we thought you had this, and then you bring this. And then, like you said, it's been up and down of like, what's he going to have this start? But all 4 pitches working against Atlanta, really, really impressive to me. And so what's going to become of this slider going forward is the real question, because he's only thrown it 6% on the season. But if it becomes a steady 14-15% pitch, basically 10% is how much you have to throw a pitch for it to be a pitch in your arsenal.
Right.
And so right now he's got the 4-seam curve and slider, or excuse me, splitter for Mitchell Parker. if that slider becomes part of it, I think we could have one of our breakouts of the year. You know, they have two great lefties right now with Gore and Parker. It's a shame that, you know, they can't really get too much offense going because they've got a couple win days in their rotation. And Jake Irvin, you know, we should give him some love. He's been doing some good things too. 3.79 ERA, 1.07 whip. He's been really nice. Trevor Williams was Mr. Vargas rule. He's got great numbers. If they could hit it all, they'd be in some fringe. I guess they are kind of in fringe contention. They're 24 and 28. They're not out of it with all the wild cards out there. Yeah. So yeah, go Nats, man. I've been impressed with their pitchers.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, then again, there's still Patrick Corbin there. I do not believe in Trevor Williams in any sense of that.
I don't and either. The skills are the skills through 51 innings, though, right? Like, he doesn't. And here's the thing, though. He doesn't have to be great for them. If you can get the hitting going and you go Gore, Parker, Irvin as your top three, and they keep pitching the way they're going.
Then you get the Jake Irvin, who's throwing more curveballs, and those are effective enough, but I don't know.
I don't know.
What you could see is that they go on a little bit of a run and then they go and acquire somebody.
Yeah.
Because they really feel like that they need to do that. There's also DJ Hers at some point that should come up. I just remember
live arm,
but I haven't paid enough attention in the preseason enough. But yeah, Mitchell Parker is a fun start of the week, but you won't take a point, will you?
No, I don't think I should. I appreciate that you're willing to give it to me. You know, because then I kind of want to give you one for Nick Martinez then, because he dominated the Dodgers.
That one. I take that for the other one. Okay, I see what you're saying.
I know.
No points.
Okay.
So then we had our one game matchup, which was a lovely time. I live streamed it on my birthday. And
happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you. But, you know, it was birthday week. And Cole Reagans against Eric Skubal. Cole Reagans gave us a lovely gift of 39 points, while Skubal only 11. So I got the victory there. But the thing is, Skubal was weird in the start, and it was because he had a callus that was messing him up a little bit. They were saying he was trying to cut it off a little, and like the skin was in his way. And yeah, the changeup wasn't utilized much. Jason Benigni wisely or astutely pointed that out during the game, I should say. And it just wasn't good, Tarek Skubal. Some bad mistake fastballs in there.
And he still survived, right? Like that's the... Just to go to that margin of error thing that I'm talking about earlier with how great your stuff is, because he was very much not his best and he got beat up for 5-4. A lesser pitcher would have given up 8 runs. Like,
absolutely.
He survived enough for them to keep them in the game-ish.
And really to lean into the whole, like, you throw a good enough fastball over the plate, you're fine. It's Cole Reagans against Detroit who just did that. And even at like 94 at times, like he had depressed velocity, but then he did showcase 98 at the end. And that's kind of nice. I like that Rodon Verlander approach from Reagans instead of trying to do 97 all the time. Hey, pull it back to 95 and then go for it. There are still concerns. I know it's kind of crazy. I'm like the biggest Cole Reagans fan. Why don't I just accept 7 innings of 12 Ks in like one?
Yeah, why don't you?
Because the cutter and the slider are still kind of whack. They're not as consistent as they should be. Not as consistent as they were in the second half of last year. They are so imperative for teams not rhyming with the Rigers. and he needs to have those pitches back for me to really feel like, oh no, Cole Reagans is like the best pitcher in baseball. So hopefully we see that moving forward. Obviously 12 Ks in 7 innings is just absurd. That's how good his fastball changeup is. And that's what makes him unreal when he has a slider and cutter as well. Looking at this week, all right, we have our streamers 20% or fewer rostered. Who is yours this week for your streamer?
So for this week, I am going with Albert Suarez making his way into the rotation under unfortunate circumstances. We never root for injuries or anything like that. But that is the case with our boy John Means Business. He's going to mean John Means IL right now, unfortunately. But that does open the window for Suarez to jump back in. And the 34-year-old coming back over from the KBO has been really, really impressive. He made some noise in spring that kind of got people's attention. But he didn't become like a fantasy darling because there really wasn't room in the rotation there. Because, you know, you had Means working his way back. You had Bradish working his way back. Cole Irvin was kind of the guy that really pushed him out because they were going Burns, Grayson, Kramer, Irvin, and who were they starting over him? Because Tyler Wells. So they had too many guys originally that even with some of the injuries that they had with Bradish and Means, there was no room for Suarez. Well, Wells is on the IL. Means and Kramer both go on the IL at the same time. here you go, another opportunity for Suarez. Love what he's been doing in his limited time so far. 29 innings with a 1.53 ERA, 0.96 WHIP. Good control and solid command. Not huge Ks, but I'll take the win upside there. Versus Tampa Bay, just 5% rostered. Give me Albert Suarez.
Yeah, the one concern I have, I mean, like him versus Cole Irvin, by the way. Would you favor Cole Irvin for a higher win chance, maybe?
Lefty-righty version of each other.
A little different. But yeah, I see.
Just the general profile of like finesse guys that are going to lean on the park. I'd probably want to know how Tampa Bay performs against righties and lefties.
That's fair enough. That's super fair. For me, I think I lean Cole Irvin in the list because Albert Suarez, this is what he does. He shows up for a game, has like 10 whiffs on the four-seamer upstairs, throws it like 95, 96. Then the next one's like 93 and not as many whiffs. And his secondary stuff is always far behind.
Modest, yes.
While Cole Irvin, to me, at least feels like, okay, you have the general thing. You have a generalized floor. The Rays aren't going to score many runs. The Orioles should probably do well.
Yeah.
Like I think there's a higher win chance with Cole Irvin, but I think there's a higher strikeout chance with Albert Suarez. So
I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, you know, and it's up to you if you want to go with either one. I think both should be fine, so I'm cool with that. That's a good pick, 5% roster there for Albert Suarez. And I just don't get why people hate Jose Soriano.
Dude, I don't either. I know this is your pick, and here I am blabbing, but let me jump real quick. Mickey Moniak, they had a quote from him. Did you see this floating around? Anybody send this to you? Because I know you're a big Soriano guy. I'm going to always associate you with him. You're the one who fully put me on, and now he's one of my favorite pitch. I have watched every start since we talked about him. I love this guy. Oh, I really, really do.
Love it.
Mickey Moniak thinks he's a top three pitcher in baseball. Yes. I don't think I would go that far. But I love like his team, and they had a few other quotes too, but the Moniak one was the one that stuck out to me. The team thinks that they have the next big thing here. And when you watch him, like you can understand when he's on, his stuff is electric. Exactly. When you throw 100 and you have other stuff as a starter, I get it. He's not quite there, but I'm to your original point. Why is he 9% rostered? What are we missing here? I don't understand. Okay. I understand that piece of it a bit, but I don't know. He's so good. The upside still feels so rich to me. 3.61 ERA, 1.19 WHIP. You got him going into Seattle. They're a wretched offense. He could really smoke them. Talk to us about Jose Soriano, Nick.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward. He throws the sinker. I compare him a lot to Jordan Hicks, just fewer sinker strikes.
It's a very good comparison.
Still like 65% strike rate on the sinker. I want to see closer to like the 68-70% for me to feel really good about Hicks. And that's why about Soriano. Because Jose Soriano, like there's still that 10.5% walk rate.
Yep.
And that will eat into a little bit of the problems that he has. At the same time, that is a really low ICR pitch. And as long as Soriano has that foundation of sinkers for strikes, then the curveball will feast because that is a 64% strike rate pitch, 39% CSW on that. And that's really what he does. The four seamer he should stop using. It's not very good. It's much worse. And by the way, this is a sinker at 88 miles per hour with movement. I am curious to see if the splitter can actually do things. So far, no. However, it makes all the sense. If you want to talk about guys in the past who I've seen have these electric sinkers and be able to go through innings efficiently. I mean, Sandy Alcantara, that's the mold of it. It's just, okay, there's a lot of steps first. It's, can you throw the sinker a little bit better? Can you get a changeup in there too? Can you make your four-seamer not be so terrible? So I can see where they're coming from with that, with this elite velocity and ability to get through innings, but he's just good. And he's going against the Mariners. Like, the Mariners are not a good offense, y'all.
They can't hit anybody. So if you have any confidence in a pitcher, let alone somebody like Soriano that we have, like, extreme confidence in, like, that can be something special. Yeah, just, like, they cannot hit right now.
No.
They're going to need to figure that out if they're going to make the playoffs, or else they're going to waste this excellent rotation they have.
Absolutely. So we have three more we're going to get through here quickly. We have Sit of the Week. You have a very interesting one, speaking of the Angels. Carlos Rodon.
Carlos Rodon, and I think I've had a sit on him before, so I'm sorry, y'all. I'm not a Rodon hater. I'm really not. But what I was hinting at earlier was that the Angels actually hit lefties pretty well for the year. And so, you know, when we're finding a sit as we said earlier, we're trying to like root for the player. We don't really want them to flop. Right. But we're trying to give good advice here. And if you are going to make a sit of a premier pitcher, I'm still looking at the guy that has a 2.95 ERA, but all of his ERA indicators are in the low to mid fours. And that's Carlos Rodon, because he's not getting all the strikeouts that we would normally expect from him. The homers are still up a bit. And this Angels team is second in WOBA against lefties. So that's, if you're going to be sitting somebody that's studly, I think a sit spot here for Rodon makes a bit of sense. This Angels team, sneaky good against left-handers. So be careful. You know, we'll see what they do against Cortez today. If they dominate him, that might make people even a bit more scared against Rodon. If they go the other way and Rodon dominates them, then maybe you're not feeling as concerned. But just don't blindly start every lefty against the Angels. For these sits, we're generally talking like 10s and maybe 12s, by the way. You know, 15, you could never sit Rodon. I don't care.
Yeah, we're saying like, hey, look, these are guys that have become pretty much auto starts, but also...
But if you want to get cute with it,
that we actually start thinking otherwise.
Yeah, there's some of y'all that try to thread the needle of sitting your studs when they might pop.
Yeah.
This would be an opportunity for that.
I mean, I'm not going to actually suggest that you sit my guy, but I'm just telling you that I'm worried.
Okay.
And that's Seth Lugo. I actually just did a video this morning, a very nonchalant one. Sometimes I do those pitcher video breakdowns and I'm like, hey, I'm so excited. We're going to go into this, all this stuff. And this one was just like, ah, blah, blah. And I watched that game on Friday because, again, I wanted to take another look at it. And it's just the Rays just fell over. Like they attacked Seth Lugo so much. He went through, I think, 8 batters and 13 pitches. His first 8 batters of the game were 13 pitches because they just kept swinging everything. That included a bases loaded first inning that he got out of for just one run.
That explains so, 3 punchies in 7 innings for Lugo.
It's absurd. And these were not, they were swinging at pitches that were hittable. It's not something that I think that Seth Lugo is really like this new ace. Like, remember even last year, I was the guy that was like, yeah, Seth Lugo's a Toby. Everyone's like, oh, Seth Lugo's terrible. He ends the year like a 3.60 ERA and a 1.20 whip. I'm like, yeah, that was a Toby. And but because he had these like ridiculously bad starts, everyone was just afraid of him for a while and everything like that. But generally he's fine. And he has an improved slider this year that has had better results, but it didn't do well against the Rays. The curveball can be really good. And the command, I think, was a little bit off on that one too. He's fine. And the thing is, if you're just fine, then you're going to have a decent chance of actually not being fine, even against the Twins. So just something to be aware of if you have Seth Lugo. Be
Here's
ready.
One thing.
He's going to come soon.
Is Here's one thing I would say. Sorry.
I'm still going to be starting Seth Lugo.
Yeah. But, and that's the thing with the sit of the week. If you want to find a practical use for it, I would say the DFS landscape. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at daily situations and you play that sort of stuff, that might be where these are most useful. Because you see Lugo and you're like, oh, I could start him here. Then don't do that. Don't pick him in a DraftKings. Don't pick Rodon in a DraftKings. But in your leagues, it is going to be really hard to truly sit either of them. And I just want to clear that up for people that think that we're actually going out there. Because I'm not doing that. If I have Rodon, I'm not actually sitting him anywhere. Yeah. I'm just nervous about this LA stuff.
Yeah, and George Kirby against the Astros, I'm also really nervous about, but I hope he's okay.
A lot of nerves creeping up about him right now. I still love him, but... Yeah. Let's talk stars of the week. 50%.
So we talked about Soriano.
Yeah, we did that's one. Mine.
You got yours. So that's good. This is hilarious because literally this guy I did not know until about 2 hours ago.
Oh, you didn't know who he was? Oh, I love that.
2.5 hours ago. I just didn't know who he was.
That's this amazing.
Spencer Schwellenbach.
That's right.
Of Atlanta. And the story of him, drafted in 2021 as a shortstop and pitcher.
Yep.
Got Tommy John. 2023 pitches a couple games or whatever it is, has a little bit of struggle in one version of A and then goes to another A, whatever. This year, 6 games. That's it. 4 in A plus ball and then 2 in double A. In double A, he has like a 38% K rate and like no walks and a 18% strike rate. Like just completely strikes out guys all the time, has not walked a lot of batters at all. I'm just watching the video and I made a thread on Twitter about it. It looks like he throws a 4-seamer and a sinker and with a low attack angle, like he actually goes down low and drives out, which is good. A filthy slider and also a curveball. And all I'm thinking to myself is, okay, this guy just tore up the minors to a degree that Atlanta's like, whatever, let's just give it a shot. but also tore up the minors. Like, did the thing mm-hmm. you're supposed to do if you are really good. He's pitching tomorrow, I believe. Actually, today, as we're saying this now, it's Wednesday. To make his MLB debut for Atlanta against the Nationals. I don't like starting guys in MLB debuts. However, sure. I am all for spec ads. And look, he could just run away with this. They've been trying to find their SP5 since Strider left. It was yep. not Bryce Elder. It's not AJ.
It's not Darius Fiennes.
Right? It's not Darius Fiennes, right? Like these guys, like Smith Shawver is now hurt for a while too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might be this guy, Schwellenbach. So I'm all for picking him up and everybody is just throwing all the fab at him. Obviously, watch the roundup. I'll probably have a video on him tomorrow morning on YouTube as well. I'll give you my full-on thoughts about it for Thursday, I should say. And it's going to be fun. There's my star of the week. What the heck?
I love it. I love it. I love that you didn't know about him either, because I thought yep. when you put him there that he was like a prospect that you were a big fan of, and now you get to see him. I actually know him via OOTP, and I learned about a lot of players via playing out of the park baseball, because you know, as you play Sims, prospects come up and become things. In that universe, he became a fringe two-way. He was mostly a pitcher, but I would play Atlanta. This was when I was doing a Marlins franchise, and I'd play them in the playoffs a bunch, and Schwellenbach was a nemesis of mine. So I have a little, you know, not animosity, like a silly animosity where I'm like, Schwellenbach, you. But I'm eager to see what he can do. And we put out a card of him last year, and because his name was so long, it was like in 1-point font.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So that's another thing I remember about him. But yeah, Spencer Schwellenbach, they're probably not going to let him hit it all in the mate. Like, I don't think that's really a part of his game. He did hit, he didn't hit it all last year. So yeah, they've pretty much put that to the side.
About? You must be saying, oh no, I see, right? Two-way player. Okay.
Yeah. So, but I like that. Great call there. What's our matchup of the week?
Oh man, we have some fun ones to choose from here. We thought about maybe Ranger Suarez versus Sonny Gray, Hunter Green and Justin Steele. Bradish and Bradley, there's a
Skeens Flaherty.
Yeah, Skeens Flaherty sounds pretty cool, but we've done too many Tigers.
Yeah, exactly. So
we've got, you said this, you're like, you know what, let's go for the lower tier ones. Mm-hmm. And this is actually pretty cool. It's Ben Lively versus Mitchell Parker. So here I am saying all these things about Mitchell Parker, the slider. Oh my gosh. Who do you have?
I truly could have gone either way, but at being the Parker guy, you let me have him since I didn't get to have him for Star of the Week last week. So I am going with Parker. I do have some love for Lively, though. I mean, what he's been doing. Yeah, he's been great with Cleveland. This might be their find of the year type of vibe, which they need because they lost Bieber. You know, Gavin Williams hasn't come back. Logan Allen hasn't been great. Even Bybee's had some ups and downs until the recent run. So they need somebody to step up, and Lively has absolutely done that. But I already talked about Parker. You know how much I love him. This is one of those where I do love both of the guys going. So I'm just hoping for a really good game between us. But give us some insights into what Lively's doing to succeed. Do you believe that this is something that Cleveland's struck upon, or do they have themselves like a real-life Vargas rule that they need to be careful here? Rule.
He's gone against a lot of weak opponents in his time, Ben Lively. Mm-hmm. But what is really cool is how good the sweeper is this year. About 26% usage against right-handers, and it's just destroyed them. 27% ICR, also seeing the sinker return, 35% ICR as well. There is some worry about the four seamers effectiveness overall. I mean, it does come in around like 90 miles per hour, but Ben Lively is a guy with a lot of extension and he does locate upstairs really effectively. So he's had these high sinkers, which is of course Eno's favorite thing these days. But really the game changer for me is that against lefties, that sweeper doesn't actually become worse. It's a 25% ICR across 16% usage, which is so lovely to see. And the curveball and changeup are decent there. High strike rate with the sinker and high destruction against it as well. Same with the four seamer against lefties, but against right-handers, and that's I believe a lot of the Nationals. Are you going to see a lot of lefties facing Mitchell Parker? I hope not.
I'm trying to think. Well,
but Lively has been able to spot that four seamer and sinker well upstairs a good amount.
It'll be a pretty lefty heavy lineup. Abrams, Luis Garcia, Eddie Rosario, Winker. Winker was nicked up, but he came back. And then Joey Gallo.
You got this, buddy.
And Ruiz is a switch hitter. So it's only going to be three traditional righties against him. So he'll have his work cut out for him.
The thing is, though, he has not had a single start above 300 runs this year.
Yeah, and the one of the 2-3s was 3 solos against Texas. So he kept the bases clean to where those didn't really kill him. He's been getting the job done. He's been a great find in 15s obviously had some 12-team viability. Well, I guess even 10-team with a 2.80 ERA. But, you know, you got to be careful in those shallower leagues. Yeah. But I do think this could be a heck of a matchup here between Lively and Parker. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that his 4-seamer with its elite extension can do enough at 90 miles per hour. But that's going to round out this week. It is 17 Spore, 16 Pollock through 9 weeks. Oh, my gosh. Look at us. It's anybody's game.
It really
better
is.
Better be like most of the season, please.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking is that like it's going to be back and forth. There'll be 3-0 weeks one way or the other. But then both times that's happened, the guy that took the 3-0 beating got back right after that. So, Nick, great talking with you, man.
For this episode of the Fireside Chat. Spore, what are you working on this week?
Just standard stuff, daily SP chart, you know, getting the OTP content together. Nothing too crazy here. So just, you know, kind of back in the grind, getting things situated in June for the June rankings. And I know the calendar hasn't even flipped yet. And I just put out the other ones a week and a half ago, but I don't like to wait till the last minute because then it takes forever. Absolutely. So yeah, just working on standard stuff. What about you?
I mean, I'm working on a lot of PL11 stuff.
Excellent.
Working on the pro dashboard and mobile app, if you can believe that. Lots of fun stuff there behind the scenes that we're working on. But overall, I mean, you know, you guys know where to find me, playback.tv/pitchless,
right?
Or also at twitch.tv/spore. Hang out with us. If you feel like we are getting things wrong, just join us by the fire on live stream.
Let us know.
It's the best time. It's by far the best way to reach out to us and really just understand our whole process, because that's the fun of what we do. But that is going to be it for this week. Spore, thank you so much for joining me. This drink was lovely. This non-alcoholic beverage, clearly, of course, was just absolutely lovely.
And I enjoyed my raspberry lemonade.
And always fun hanging with you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter @Spore and @PitcherList.